Listening Library presents Between Worlds by Skip Brittenham. Read for you by Katie Shore. For the love of my life, Heather, who inspired me to write. My fabulous daughters, Christina, Shauna, and India, who encouraged me to keep going. And my buddy Tom, who never lets me forget how important it is to have fun. Prologue. After the little girl's funeral, the mourners crowded together in her parents' living room. A cloud of regret hung in the air like an impending storm, masking the fragrance of the traditional white lilies that filled the room. Dozens of tribute posters handcrafted by Laura's classmates hung in neat rows above the mantelpiece. But neither art nor words of sympathy could diminish the pain of Laura's heartbroken parents. Their other child, a 12-year-old boy named Aaron, huddled on a chair in the corner of the living room, his red hair standing out like a flag against his ashen skin. A few days ago, he'd started a snowball fight with his little sister Laura at a local park. To escape the rain of snowballs Aaron was hurling, Laura had bolted out onto the snow-covered ice on the surface of the park's pond. She couldn't tell that there was water beneath her feet because the heavy snow had erased any definable shore. The ice cracked, and Laura fell through. Aaron yelled for help, but no one was nearby. He quickly slid on his belly out onto the frozen pond until he was right in front of the open hole. Aaron couldn't make out Laura's bright purple jacket under the jagged pieces of ice, but he plunged his arms deep into the frigid water and felt desperately for her, screaming her name. His hands couldn't find any part of her. He continued to scream and splash long after he knew it was too late. Now, a steady stream of family, friends, and classmates shuffled toward his corner, trying to comfort him, all making a point of emphasizing that it wasn't his fault. But their words only tormented him. They knew, and he knew, that it could only be his fault. He should have been protecting her, not hitting her with snowballs. Mary, a friend of Aaron's mom, walked over and put a hand on his shoulder, then crouched so she was at his eye level. "You did your best," she said, wiping away the tears and mascara that trailed down her face. "It was just her time." But it shouldn't have been her time. Aaron vaulted to his feet, swept past Mary's legs, then pushed clumsily through the cluster of mourners. He plucked his black winter parka from a wooden peg near the front door and hastily put it on, then opened the door to an arctic blast and a cold, bleak landscape. Aaron's mother had been sitting on a couch with her head in her hands, weeping, but she looked up when she felt the cold air rushing in. "Where are you going, Aaron?" she called out feebly. It was all well and good for her to wonder what he was doing now, but she and his father had been holed up in their bedroom for days, ignoring him and crying together. He knew they didn't want him anymore, not after what he'd done to Laura. Without replying, Aaron walked out into the bitter Minnesota midwinter cold and closed the door behind him. He grabbed the handlebars of his blue Electra cruiser, which was leaning against the deck, and used the pair of fur-lined leather gloves he pulled from his pockets to slap the snow off the seat. The curtains were pulled open by a handful of wide-eyed adults who stared out at him. Aaron flipped up the hood of his parka, mounted the bike, and pedaled around the parked cars and down the snow-covered driveway, then turned onto the slushy country road. Powdery white snowflakes were falling, but the ominous gray sky boiling above him foreshadowed more severe weather on the way. His teary eyes made the pine trees blur into vague masses of green and brown that streamed past him as he raced down the road. Aaron didn't have any particular destination in mind. He just needed to find a way to stop thinking about how guilty he felt, at least for a while. A half hour later, the wheels of his bike skittered into a gravel parking lot, pockmarked with lumps of ice and snow. The fast-paced ride had made him sweaty, and the white dress shirt he'd worn to the funeral was sticking to his skin. As he stepped off the bike, a gust of wind enveloped him, sending a chill down his spine. He reached down and zipped the parka to his chin. A battered gray split-rail fence with two yellow no-trespassing signs lined the edge of a large open meadow carpeted with patches of snow. Next to the fence, a log pole bore a cracked wooden sign, which read, Mystery Forest Viewing Area. Underneath it was a Mystery Forest Legends sign. A shabby ranger's log cabin sat at the west end of the viewing area, but the windows were dark, and it appeared to be as unoccupied as the parking lot. Aaron wiped his nose with the back of his hand and looked around. He had no idea what had drawn him there. The town council had attached the word mystery to the Aspen Grove over a decade ago, in a lame attempt to create a tourist attraction. There was nothing mysterious about the Mystery Forest, though. It was just a big aspen grove that butted against an old-growth pine forest. The council encouraged the townspeople to create and circulate rumors about the grove anyway, and the town and local paper had adopted the task with enthusiasm. Of the tales that had emerged, the dumbest and most improbable one was that a wishing tree lived at the grove's center. If it was in the right mood, the tree would grant a wish to whoever touched it. As far as Aaron knew, no one had ever found the tree, much less had a wish granted, probably because it didn't exist. After numerous hikers trying to find the tree or unearth the mystery had become lost or required rescue, Forest Service officials severely reduced access by requiring hikers to apply for special entry permits, which were rarely granted. Eventually, the myth of the tree died, along with the town's other fanciful forest stories. The smattering of people who still came here did so to photograph the herds of pewter-colored mule deer that the rangers lured into the meadow with grain and fresh hay. The tree might not be real, but Aaron desperately wanted to believe that something could alter his sister's fate and his. Ignoring the no trespassing signs, he climbed over the sagging fence and tramped toward the pine forest at the meadow's end. After crossing the rickety-covered bridge that spanned the slowly meandering river, he finally reached the tree line. His heart began to pound, and his mouth went dry. Aaron clenched his fists into tight balls and took a step into the forest. No matter how improbable his quest for the tree was, he felt compelled to trespass into the forbidden forest to continue it. The snow danced wildly in the wind and began to fall harder, quickly covering the trails like lacy white curtains. Not knowing which way to go, Aaron dashed into the largest open space between the trees and began to march through the woods. Soon, heavy clumps of slush caked his boots, making every step harder, but he couldn't stop, and he definitely couldn't go home. Before long, the huge stands of green pine, fir, and spruce disappeared. Only a wall of aspen trees remained, tall and regal, with bright white trunks streaked with black. They crowded close together, like the Red Queen's soldiers standing at attention. Good, Aaron thought, his spirits lifting. He was actually in the Mystery Forest where he needed to be, and maybe something better would happen. Whether he found the tree or not, the walk would distract him. Either way, it was better than being at the wake. A half hour later, as dusk neared, a searing blast of wind slapped his face, burnishing the raw pink marks on his cheeks. He was weary and disoriented, and his pace had slowed to a depressing trudge. The temperature was continuing to dip, and he felt his first real pulse of fear. He was lost, like all those other hikers. In this section of the grove, the aspens grew closer together, making his passage
Sample complete. Ready to continue?